Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an analysis of the legal history of the Second Amendment, which has been interpreted by the NRA and gun rights activists to bestow constitutional rights on the unrestricted ownership and use of guns in America. Professor of History and Chair of Education at New York University, Jonathan Zimmerman, joins us to discuss his article in the Christian Science Monitor, Sandy Hook, The NRA's Gun Rights Are a Fabrication of Modern Times. Then we will speak with Michael Lind, who has an article at Salon.com, Guns Have Never Saved Us. We will further discuss how gun advocates have misread the Second Amendment and examine the real historical record that shatters the cherished myth America won its freedom from the Redcoats because of individual gun ownership and that an armed citizenry protects our liberties from government tyranny. Then finally, we'll look into the findings of a report by an independent panel who investigated the Benghazi incident that Fox News and the Republicans have been trying to blow up into a major foreign policy issue. The author of America's Other Army, the U.S. Foreign Service and 21st Century Diplomacy, and former Financial Times correspondent Nicholas Kralev joins us. He has traveled the world with four U.S. Secretaries of State, Hillary Clinton, Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell, and Madeleine Albright. Joining us now is Jonathan Zimmerman, who's a professor of education and history and director of the History of Education Program at the Steinhardt School of Culture, Education, and Human Development at New York University. He also holds an appointment in the Department of History at NYU's Graduate School of Arts and Sciences. A former Peace Corps volunteer and high school teacher, Zimmerman is the author of Small Wonder, The Little Red Schoolhouse in History and Memory. He has an article at the Christian Science Monitor, Sandy Hook Massacre, the NRA's Gun Rights Are a Fabrication of Modern Times. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jonathan Zimmerman.
Thanks for having me.
And it's extraordinary to think that a very simple amendment to the Constitution that was passed by Congress and ratified by the states and authenticated by Thomas Jefferson, Secretary of State, reads as follows: a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. How has that become so misinterpreted in America?
Well, I think the larger historical point is that really up until the 1970s, almost nobody thought this amendment protected individual gun rights. The reason I wrote my piece is I wanted to remind readers just how new that interpretation is. For the vast majority of our history, the assumption was that this amendment protected collective security and specifically protected the right of state militias to arm themselves. But nobody, or almost nobody, thought it protected an individual right, and indeed the court said that it didn't. It's really only in the past 3 to 4 decades that this has become part of the doctrine, and I should say it's been quite successful from the point of view of the advocates of the doctrine. So we now find millions of Americans who do believe that the amendment supports individual gun rights, but we need to remember, again, that's of incredibly recent vintage.
And what effect did the recent decision where the Supreme Court struck down a ban on handguns by the District of Columbia in 2008? There was a certain amount of outrage at that point where the predicate to the Second Amendment, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of the free state, seemed to have been moved to the back of it. And the following part, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, that seemed to move to the front row. Is that what happened?
Yes, no, that's exactly right. And that was really the culmination, the apotheosis of about 3 or 4 decades of legal activism by the NRA and other groups in its camp. They actually enlisted law professors to write law review articles in especially the 70s and 80s promoting this new view. And I think it's fair to say that this view and the NRA itself are the radicals here. I think it's interesting that we often now call this view conservative, but in a dictionary sense, it's actually quite radical because it is an extreme departure from the past.
So given that this was largely authored, this opinion, that where the Supreme Court struck down the ban on handguns by the District of Columbia in 2008, largely authored by Justice Scalia, joined by his four conservative colleagues, and I think I'll use your word, radical colleagues, in this case. Nevertheless, in his opinion, Justice Scalia said, like all rights, the right secured by the Second Amendment is not unlimited, and nothing in our opinion should be taken to cast doubt on longstanding prohibitions on the possession of firearms by felons and the mentally ill, or laws forbidding the carrying of firearms in sensitive places such as schools and government buildings, or laws imposing conditions and qualifications on the commercial sale of arms. We also recognize another important limitation on the right to keep and carry arms, prohibiting the carrying of dangerous and unusual weapons. So as I read that, I'm thinking of the Sandy Hook, and I'm thinking, well, you know, a mentally ill person, you know, not having guns in schools, and not having carrying dangerous and unusual weapons like assault rifles.
Well, see, the way I would interpret this, I'm glad you quoted that, because I think some people have misinterpreted the Heller decision, that's this D.C. decision in 2008, to be a kind of affirmation of unbridled gun rights. It actually isn't, for the reasons that you just stated. But I would say that the NRA especially has been so successful in promoting the idea of an unbridled individual gun right that we've even misinterpreted Heller. That is, we think, or lots of people think, before they read it, that it says you can have any gun and take it anywhere. It doesn't say that. But it does say that the Second Amendment implies an individual gun right, not an unlimited one. All right, but it does say that this isn't just about militias. The amendment allows individuals or guarantees a kind of individual right separate from the collective, separate from the militias. Now, look, in fairness, we should say that legal doctrine always evolves, and many of us on the left often celebrate its evolution, right? Think about, you know, legal doctrine involving race. For 200 years, we have court decisions that uphold or even celebrate things like enslavement or segregation or disenfranchisement. And we tell a story, many of us, of how, you know, through activism, through protest, through research, we develop more enlightened legal views. It is possible, okay, although I wouldn't agree with it, for somebody in the NRA to say, look, for about 200 years, we misinterpreted the Second Amendment to say it was just about militias, where really it should be about individual gun rights. I might not agree with that statement, but at least it has the virtue of honesty. The dishonest position that I will not abide by, that I will not hear and will not accept, is that for 200 years anybody could have a gun wherever they wanted until the big bad liberal state took it away. That story is a lie.
Again, I'm speaking with Jonathan Zimmern, who's a professor of education and history and director of the History of Education program at the Steinhardt School of Culture, Education, and Human Development at New York University. He also holds an appointment in the Department of History at NYU's Graduate School of Arts and Sciences. He's a former Peace Corps volunteer and high school teacher and the author of Small Wonder, The Little Red Schoolhouse in History and Memory. And he has an article at the Christian Science Monitor, Sandy Hook Massacre, The NRA's Gun Rights Are a Fabrication of Modern Times. I learned from your article, Jonathan, not just some of the history of the NRA, which was founded in 1871 as a hunting organization and backed the first major federal gun regulation, the 1934 National Firearms Act, which, of course, bans the use of machine guns. And then, but what I find extraordinary is how the former Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Chief Justice Warren Burger, reflecting on the NRA's politicking, said that the Second Amendment has been the subject of one of the greatest pieces of fraud. I repeat the word fraud on the American public by special interest groups that I have ever seen in my lifetime.
That's right. That's right. I mean, that was, you know, that was Burger's view. And let's remember that Burger was a Nixon appointee. He was a career Republican. But you know, he was speaking right on the cusp of this new interpretation, this new change, brought to us by a new NRA. As you mentioned earlier, I mean, the original NRA supported all kinds of gun legislation, both at the state level, including bans on concealed weapons, including license and permit requirements, and then the first federal laws. You know, their motto said something about firearm safety, nothing about, you know, the right to bear arms shouldn't be infringed. They were obviously gun enthusiasts, gun owners, mostly sportsmen, and what they wanted was the safe use of guns for recreation.
So obviously they have moved at quite a pace to change the laws, and there's been a blizzard of these conceal and carry laws. 44 states have passed these since 1980, this means that people can carry concealed weapons outside of their homes. But what's interesting about that, as you point out in your article, Jonathan Zimmerman, at the Christian Science Monitor Sandy Hook Massacre, the NRA's gun rights are a fabrication of modern times. You point out that a 2004 Gallup poll found that 44% of Americans believe that only law enforcement officials should have the right to carry and conceal. Another 26% that only those who have a clear need for a weapon should be able to carry and conceal, leaving only 27% supporting the NRA's position.
That's true, but also that was in 2004, and I think all of us, in fairness, should point out that the poll trends have been all towards gun rights and away from gun control. You know, the worst argument right now in favor of gun control is that the public favors it. The real problem is that the, quote, gun rights lobby has been so effective in persuading people. Look, my hat's off to them in a way. Even though I loathe their position, they have been extremely disciplined and extremely eloquent in putting it forward, and they have persuaded people. And I think that right now the best argument is not, you know, the people want gun control because all the poll literature is trending away from that. The best argument is, you know, we let the gun rights lobby win this rhetorical war, and we have to fight back now. We have to do exactly what they did, and that's what democracy is. I support what they did in that sense, putting forth their view. People who oppose that view should not pretend that they're in the majority. They're not. In a lot of ways, they're in the minority. What they need to do is get back to history, get back to organizing, and persuade people in the other direction.
So do you think, Jonathan Zimmerman, that the president can start this movement that you're talking about to reverse the power of the NRA to change the laws and to essentially reinterpret the Second Amendment? He came out today and said that he was putting Vice President Biden in charge of a intergovernment administration-wide effort to create new recommendations. He was very insistent that this was not yet another government report that would be ultimately shelved, that he wants something to really come out of this. And he went on to say, we're going to need to work on making access to mental health care at least as easy to access as access to guns. You know, I mean, everything that all of the response to Sandy Hook is you know, obviously belated, but rational, I think, on the part of people who are appalled by it. But to reinforce what you said about how effective the gun lobby has been. Yesterday was the biggest sales day in the history of the United States for guns. They're flying
that's
off
right.
the shelves.
And the
gun manufacturers are laughing all the way to the bank.
This is going to be a long struggle, and I don't blame the gun manufacturers either. I mean, you know, look, it's a legal product, right? They're trying to sell it. The problem is not in gun manufacturers, and the problem is not in Obama. The problem's not in the NRA. The problem's in us. You know, we get the democracy that we deserve. I don't think that there are any real sinners or devils in this. I think the public has to be persuaded that we have moved in the past 40 years in a radical and dangerous direction. Whether the president can persuade them of that is a very open question. I was very pleased to see that, you know, he appointed Biden to this position. He was very direct about the need to do something absolutely right now. I understand the reasons that the gun control lobby has been so disappointed with the president. I've been disappointed with him myself. But then I see all this poll literature about how many people believe in gun rights, right? And I think everyone who criticizes the president has to ask themselves, if he had come out vehemently for gun rights, either when he was running against, if he'd come out vehemently for gun control, either when he was running against McCain or against Romney, would he have been elected? I think there's a lot of strong evidence to suggest no. So it's pretty hard in this hurly-burly world of politics to cast too hard a stone at him. I think he's a vastly superior president than either of those individuals would have been. And I say that as somebody who is deeply distressed by, you know, the rise of the gun rights ideology and the ubiquity of guns in this society. It's a tough nut to crack.
But surely, Jonathan Zimmerman, one of the problems that we have with our government and the Supreme Court, its decision in Citizens United has only exacerbated this problem, is that special interests and special interest money have an inordinate effect and power in Washington. And the NRA has often been described as a very, very fearful lobby that has the Congress people quite as scared not to cross them, and that they make it clear that if you cross us, we'll run somebody against you in a primary, in the next primary, and defeat you, and we'll spend unlimited amounts of money, which incidentally come from the gun and ammunition manufacturers. They play hardball. The only person that I can see in our political world that understands this and is trying to do something about it is Mayor Bloomberg, because he's basically saying to politicians, I'll have your back. If the NRA come after you, I'll make sure you get funding from me. So maybe that's absolutely a place to start.
Look, perhaps so. You know, I mean, look, what you just said about the power of the gun lobby is true, but that goes for a million different lobbies, right? Because of, you know, the nature of money in American politics right now. This is in no way exclusive to the gun issue. It may well be that the consequences of it are more awful and morbid, right? But you could talk about 70 different issues in which a certain lobby exerts inordinate power. I mean, I do think it's ironic, although I deeply support what Bloomberg is doing and saying, for those of us who are critical of the role of big money in politics, it is, I don't want to use too strong a word, it's not hypocritical, but there is something a little bit ironic about in the same breath saying, oh God, you know, the political system is so corrupt because there's just so much, like, private money running through it, right, that's biasing everything. And then, you know, applauding Mike Bloomberg when he writes an enormous check out of his bank. You know, there's an interesting tension there. Again, I'm not criticizing him for doing so. And it may well be that given the current legal landscape involving Citizens United and everything else, that's the only way to go. It's a sad moment in a way.
Well, Jonathan Zimmerman, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you. I hope it was useful.
Very much so.
Okay. Have a good night.
You too. Again, I've been speaking with Jonathan Zimmerman, who's a professor of education and history and director of the History of Education program at the Steinhardt School of Culture, Education, and Human Development at New York University. He also holds an appointment in the Department of History at NYU's Graduate School of Arts and Sciences. He's a former Peace Corps volunteer and high school teacher and the author of Small Wonder, The Little Red Schoolhouse in History and Memory. He has an article at the Christian Science Monitor, Sandy Hook Massacre, the NRA's Gun Rights Are a Fabrication of Modern Times. We're going to take a brief station break, and we're back talking further about how gun advocates have misread the Second Amendment.
Come on back, Jesus.
Come on back, Jesus.
Come on back, Jesus. Pick up John Wayne on the way. The world's getting crazy, and it seems to get worse every day. Come on back, Jesus, and pick up John Wayne on the way.